You're tuned in, team. Totally unrelated. Enjoy.
And we're back. Welcome to Totally Unrelated, brand new episode here. Little intro before we get to the meat and potatoes of the episode. It's been a strange week. A little bit of strangeness, some shows I did last week, but mostly fun. Sober October, going strong, no temptations whatsoever. I have I ran yesterday for the first time all month. That's probably the most curious aspect of this trip, is that I thought I'd be working out like crazy because I'd have all this extra energy and nervous blah that I needed to get out of my system. But that has not been the case. I've been losing weight and not from working out. So I went for a run yesterday, went on a 2 mile run. Normally it would be a minimum of 3.5 miles. I got a mile, about 8 minute mile, my first mile. Then the second mile was about 9.5 minutes. I couldn't even stay running the entire time. I lost my breath. I was just, lungs have not been up to full capacity from not running for 3 or 4 weeks. But I did a lot of body weight exercises and stuff like that. So I'm sore as F today, and hopefully tomorrow. Well, I'm not going to go running tomorrow because I have to get up at 3:30 to head to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Picking up Danny Browning in Indianapolis at 7 a.m. and then rolling out to the UP for an Eagle Radio gig. And I don't know anything about the venue. I think it's at a hotel. I don't know. I don't know exactly. I know the hotel's there. I think the gig is inside the hotel. I don't know, but I will give you full updates when I get there. How are you doing? Good. Hopefully you're having a great week. I saw Jay Snyder today. We talked, and he looks good. He looks healthy, and that's probably the best sign that he's not. Just kidding. No, we had a good little chat. He's heading down to Florida way to do some work, and I'm heading the opposite direction. Disfortunamente. I don't know. I lost all my Spanish. It was so many years ago. Anywho, let's go right into it. This is an interview that I did last week with Walta Yosef. She is born in Kenya, transplanted to the United States as a junior in high school or a senior, I imagine. And we get into it. I'll let her tell it. There's a little bit of sound in the background because we met outside at the Funny Bone right before a contest. And yeah, it's not unbearable. It's just really faint. But if you're blasting it for whatever reason, you might hear a little bit of your favorite songs. Because it's mall music and we all love it. It never drives anyone crazy. I felt like there was a whole lot of things I wanted to say to this intro, but I'm surprisingly short. Oh, I know what I did. I just got back from Dayton today, and we went and saw a screening of Pauly Shore's new documentary. It's a docu-series. I think it's 6 parts, he said. But it's not the first time I've seen or met Pauly, but the closest and most intimate, for sure. And we got to watch 2 episodes. I only watched one and give a little bit of feedback, and he was very receptive. And very much trying to make his project better. It was a little strange because we only got to see two of it. So we missed the story arc aspect, but got to see an episode. And it's not much different than any comedy documentary I've ever seen, except for the fact that it mostly features him. Now, this other episode was supposed to have another comic in it with him, Faison Love. I did not stick around to see that because I had to get back to get ready for my trip tomorrow. But it was interesting to see what he left in the documentary and probably what he cut. But I think Pauly's a pretty genuine dude. And I think growing up with your mother being the founder of the Comedy Store was probably as much a gift as it was a curse. A lot of people have mixed emotions about Pauly. I was raised on Pauly Shore, MTV, The Weasel. And I loved everything he did when I was a kid. As an adult, He's been accused of doing the same act for way too long, but I think he's working on some new stuff, and I think he's sort of reinventing himself. So it was neat to see him open up the floor to questions from, amateur comics. I think there was some people that aren't even comics in the room, but it was still neat, and I'm glad I got to take part in it. I wish I could have stayed for the whole thing. Sadly, I could not. What else happened this weekend? Nothing too exciting. I went and saw the Yellow Springs Boys play Stiver School of the Arts on Tuesday night. The interesting aspect of that was watching the other team, the visiting team, take a knee for the national anthem. All of them. They kneeled, faced the flag, and put one hand on the shoulder of the person in front of them. Except one kid was standing with his hand on his heart. And nobody booed. Nobody said anything. Nobody was offended from what I could tell. But I have to say, they looked awfully respectful out there, taking a knee. And I have no hate for them, even though two players did get red carded from the visiting team for mouthing off to the ref using swear words. Seems like you'd probably know that what the result of that is going to be. That being said, Yellow Springs won at least 5-0. Might have been 6 or 7-0. I left about 15 minutes left in the game. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into the episode. Walter Yosef, totally unrelated. I had a great time talking with her. Very interesting and unique perspective from somebody who was not born inside the United States. Enjoy. All right, I am sitting here with Walter Yosef.
Hello.
Is that?
Perfect.
Oh, excellent. And I'm not even African. I mean, I'm like half African. Half African.
You're like a late African.
I'm like a transplant.
Okay.
Wait, no, that's not it. Anyway, welcome to Totally Unrelated. I've never had a non, I assume you're American,
Yes.
but I've never had
Recently.
recently,
Yeah.
yes, I've never had a recent American on the
Okay.
show before. So, welcome. And I guess my first question for you, and for those of you that don't know Walter, she is a Columbus comic.
Yes.
And what do you consider yourself first? I asked Chris Allen this question a while back, and I thought it was one of my favorite questions. Do you consider yourself a black woman first? Do you consider yourself a comedian first? An African first?
Well, see, that's interesting because at first I was like, oh, I'm just Walter. I didn't know I was black until I
Right.
moved to America, and people are like, oh no, you're black. You know, people put these labels on me. So at first, like, I was just a woman.
Right.
And that's it. I was just Walter. I was just a woman. And then I moved here, then I became a black woman. So now I'd see myself as an African American black woman.
So where does comedy fall in that hierarchy of labels?
And then I became a comedian. So I see myself as a comedian first. I don't think of myself as an African comedian. I'm just African, but I don't talk about African issues. I talk about myself, which has, you know, I talk about Africa a little bit. But that's because it's related to me. I don't know. It's hard. Like,
Yeah, it is a tough
yeah.
question. I think of myself as a comedian first, but as a biracial man second.
Okay.
And I think that heavily influences my comedy. Hello, young lady.
Hi,
We've just been
Leslie.
joined by Leslie Battle, who's standing in the corner. Well, we just started recording, so we'll be done probably in like 30 minutes or something like that.
I'm sorry, Leslie.
If I had more headphones, I'd let you jump right in. Maybe I'll get you next. Okay. Gonna edit that little combo out. So yes,
You see yourself as a comic first, and then all
yeah.
these other labels.
Yeah, and the funny part about that is that I saw myself as a comedian even before I was a comedian. I think I even told people I was a comedian before I was a comedian, in sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy sort of a way.
Okay.
Not for like a long time, not like for 12 years before I became a comedian.
You're the chosen one.
Yes, I just haven't done it yet. But I think comedy has always influenced my life. My family growing up was heavily influenced by comedy in terms of like how we got through our day-to-day struggles. Me and my sister were, I think, always thought we were going to grow up to be comedians. And so as soon as I became a comedian, I started telling my sister, like, almost like, like I assume like
crackheads are like, you got to try this. And that's how I felt about comedy for my sister, which she did do some comedy classes, I think, and she does do some public speaking.
Okay.
But I think there's some sort of barrier that has her not step forward.
Okay, like to the stage?
To the stage, okay. Right. And I think that if you were to ask her, like if you were to like really get down deep into her psyche, she would say she thinks she's
a comedian
first.
Yeah.
So what was it that brought you to the comedy world?
I've always loved stand-up comedy. Even when I was younger, I watched all the specials. Like, I watched everything. But I never thought of myself as a performer. I was an appreciator. Like, I just loved it. And then over time, you know, I got to see some bad specials. I was like, that was bad. This is how I would have done it better.
Right.
I was going to do it, you
Let
know?
Me tweet you real quick.
Slowly over time, I realized so many bad people are getting rich and famous. And like, I feel like I can do this better than these people who are on TV. And so then something changed in my mind. I was like, now I can be an entertainer and an appreciator also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that being a comic stops you from being a fan of comedy.
For some people, it does.
I will say that being a comic makes you a critic.
Yes.
A critiquer. Mm-hmm. Hypercritical sometimes for some people. And I think a lot of the criticisms that we see from comedians comes from our own lack of self-esteem.
Yeah, like, yeah, just deflecting your security.
Yeah. Someone else. Yeah. I was watching a show the other night here where we were, it was the last Realtor Standing. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of people that were going on stage that had never done comedy before.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, and so we had to coach a realtor. It's not realtor, how to tell some jokes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the person I had to coach, she had a very defined path of what she wanted to talk about.
Okay.
And I don't think she had any real desire to be like a comedian, per se, but I do think it was a powerful experience for her. But there was a couple people that went up there that I was like, you're already a comedian, bro. Like, you're not even struggling. And then there was one guy who... I don't know if you know who Matt Ward is, but he used to book the Cape Fear Comedy Festival.
Okay.
I mean, he's a comedian, and he's set up several festivals around the country, and he murdered.
Nice.
But he didn't win, primarily because he's only been a realtor for about 4 months. His set was the cleanest. I mean, it was set up, punchline, twist, act. I mean, he was just doing it. And then there was two other guys that were like... You know, kind of frenetic energy.
Nervous and sweating.
But the one guy who won has been doing real estate in Columbus for probably longer than we've been alive.
Okay.
And was just a live wire. And when they did the clap off at the end, it was almost like there's no way this guy doesn't win. And I always thought about it like that because I don't know if this was true for you, but I always thought that comedy would happen. Like I'd get discovered in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the mall, somebody would be like, hey, are you a comedian? And I'd be like, well, I always wanted to be. Come here, let me show you how to become a comedian. And that never happened.
Or like you're at a bar doing your set and someone in the back of the room is like, hey, I have a deal for you.
Like, right, yeah, something like that. But it always seemed far away. How long have you been in the United States?
11 years.
11 years.
Yeah.
And you're pretty young.
Yeah, on the young side.
On the young side. Yeah. I don't want to reveal a woman's age. But how soon after you got to the United States did you start thinking about, like, maybe I'll do... How long... Well, let me ask you this instead of that.
I started doing comedy 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah. But I've been watching... Like, I loved comedy since I was, like, 5. Like,
what was your comedy access in Africa like?
I watched a lot of American stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedy scene in Kenya is just started recently, like, within the last 5 years.
Okay.
Like, there was no stand-up there. We watched a lot of American TV. Like, that was... Our entertainment.
Yeah. What's what shows did you watch as a kid from America?
Days of Our Lives.
That was my sister's favorite show.
Kung Fu.
Okay.
We watched a lot of like Colombian soap operas. I guess those aren't American shows. I can't think of any. Like, they're like action TV shows.
Right.
I can't think of any.
Yeah. That's fine. So you come to the United States. You went to high school here. What was that transition like?
It was very difficult. But then also, to the previous question, we also watched a lot of Jerry Springer.
Ah.
And so I thought this is just how
Americans
are.
Americans were. Like, wow.
And then I came here. I was like, no, those are just the crazy people.
Right.
We put them on TV because they're so interesting.
Yeah.
But that's not how everyone is here. So that, in terms of culture shock, I thought I knew Americans from what I'd seen on TV, but no, there's very different groups
of people. How do you rate the cultural differences as far as like civility or... I think right now, politically, we're kind of coming unhinged because of social media and things like that. Mm-hmm. But how was it in Kenya compared to the United States? Was it a culture shock like, oh, this is way more off the chain or this is much more calm than I expected?
It was weird. So, like, in Kenya, people are open. Like, you know your neighbors, you know your friends, you have dinner together sometimes. Here, people aren't as open, but people are friendly off the get-go. Like, someone will say hi to you if they don't know you. Like, they're both friendly, but here I feel like it's a false kind of friendliness. Until you become friends, then it's real.
Yeah.
But they're friendly, but they're cold in the beginning because they don't know you. They're
right.
Like, who the fuck are you? Like,
right.
And then eventually, you know, you get over the hump and then now you're part of the family.
Yeah, yeah.
But here...
what about, like, crime?
Kenya is very corrupt.
Okay.
And, like, I remember, like... I'd be in the car with my mom. She'd get pulled over, give them money, and they'd let her go. Like, so if you had money, you were fine. If you didn't, then, you know, there was a lot of poverty, high unemployment, not enough schools. So people would graduate high school and then just do
That's
drugs.
It.
And
yeah.
then just, you know, your life goes a different direction.
What are the drugs that they do in Kenya?
There's mira, which is cut.
Okay, which is like it's a stimulant that you
yes.
chew.
Yeah.
It's like a leaf, sort of similar to... coca leaf, maybe?
Yes, similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pot?
I know that my friends there smoke pot. I didn't know about pot when I was there.
Okay.
I left when I was 17.
Oh, that's pretty old to
I
be.
Was like a good kid.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't do drugs.
Wow.
Like, I didn't know anything.
U.S. corrupted the fuck out of you.
But then I moved here and I see all my friends partying. I'm like, shit, I wish I was on that train when I was there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah that's
interesting. It didn't corrupt me. It showed me a whole new world.
There you go.
Yeah.
What about the stigma towards drugs in Kenya?
So it's not very socially open, like drugs, and also just like homosexuality, like people aren't very open. So just in general, people aren't tolerant of alternative
lifestyles.
Yeah.
Cot in some countries is like a social drug, almost like alcohol.
Yeah,
it's almost like expected.
Men, The fire table.
Sure. So is that the context of it there? Or is it like kind of underground, undercover? You don't want to get busted with this.
It's not shunned. It's not looked down upon. But it's respectable people don't chew cat.
Okay.
So there's that, yeah.
Okay.
So it's like unemployed men on the side of the road, cat calling women and
right.
chewing cat.
Okay.
Like, there's the image.
So growing up there, was your family lower, middle, upper class?
We were middle class. We lived in the suburbs. And we had a car. Like I went to good schools. And, you know, people here think that I came from the village. But no, I came from the capital city. I was speaking English before I came here. Like,
English isn't your first language?
English, Tigrinya, and Swahili are my first language. I learned them at the same time. Because in Kenya, the national language is Swahili and English. And then in Eritrea, we speak Tigrinya. So at home, I was speaking Tigrinya. With my friends, I was speaking English, Swahili. I learned them all at the same time. So they're all my first language.
How much of it do you retain now?
I don't speak much Tigrinya or Swahili now. I understand it, but sometimes I forget words. So I've been like reading storybooks just to keep myself fresh.
Have you been back since you've moved here?
I've been back to Eritrea. I went there like 5 years ago. I haven't been to Kenya yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that feeling like the first time you went back? Did you feel like, oh, this place is upside down? Or did you feel like, oh, this is home? Or?
Well, I mean, it was nice to be back. It was like, I'm back with my people again, but I'd been away for so long, so they looked at me like I was an American. Mm. And so, like, they weren't my people anymore. Like, I wanted to just be part of the group, but they're like, no, you're from America now. You know, they were still welcoming and open, but just, like, I always feel like an outsider, just, like, everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm part of the group, but just, like, the identity, I'm always,
sure.
like, the only one of this kind of identity in whatever group.
So what brought you and your parents to the U.S.?
To here. We were living in Kenya, and Kenya is pretty stable as far as African countries go, but around the election, every election, shit goes crazy. And, like, here we have two parties. In Kenya, they have seven parties. Like, anyone can start a party, freedom. But the two biggest tribes dominate the parties. So it really just ends up being two versus each other. And there's just a lot of violence, just unnecessary.
Like political violence?
Yeah, like...
assassinations?
Yeah, just because you're from the wrong tribe.
Wow.
It's like ridiculous shit. And us, we're Eritrean. We're not part of any of the Kenyan tribes. So those were usually the first people to be targeted.
Ah.
So all that happened. And then my dad had a green card, which means he can work in America and move his family to America. So we just, it was like, this is a good time to go.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
What kind of work does he do, if I can ask?
Well, right now he works at a warehouse. And my mom works at the airport. She's a manager at the food court. In Kenya, my dad worked for the UNHCR and my mom worked for the Eritrean embassy. But when we moved, because they had African degrees, they didn't recognize
the African
degrees.
They don't
translate.
That's such bullshit.
Yeah.
That's such bullshit.
So
in my country, I was brain surgeon. Here, I sweep floor. I've seen other people do that. I know a friend on this podcast, we have like 17 different Lauras.
Lauras.
That listen. So I call them the Council of Lauras. One of the Lauras is married to a doctor who was a doctor in Iran.
Okay.
And had to go back to med school as an adult when he came here, but did. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, that's commitment to the game, because if my comedy credentials weren't recognized in another country, I don't know if I could go through the open mic phase again.
Yeah, I'm just not a comedian
anymore. I guess I'll be a doctor, I guess.
That'd
be
that
easier.
Part's over.
Yeah. That's interesting to me, because when I hear you speak, it does sound like English was one of your first languages. It's mm-hmm. just that you have
an accent,
almost like a Brit or an Australian. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like there's another language that's going to come out of their mouth. It's just an accent on it. Almost like sometimes I listen to people that speak from the deep south, and I feel like they want to speak a different language.
Their mouth is doing a different shape.
It's just doing different. The first time I ever met someone from Louisiana, I was like, just talk normal now. I can't listen to this anymore. Yeah. She was like, what are you talking about?
Like, you expect them to speak French.
Exactly. Like if they just rolled into French, I'd be like, that explains everything.
That makes sense.
Do you speak any other languages?
I speak Tigrinya, which is from Eritrea, and Swahili, which is the other.
But like French or German or anything? Did you learn any of those languages?
I learned French in school, which is why I don't speak it.
Okay.
It never caught on. Like, I can read French, like, but I don't understand it.
Sure.
Because you need like an immersive education, not like an hour a day.
Right, you know? Right. I was at this baseball game with comedian Mark Vieira. We were in Syracuse. And he was talking to some guys from Dominican Republic in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I could understand everything Mark said, mm-hmm. but I could not understand a word the Dominican said. It was very strange.
Is it the accent?
I think it was the dialect.
Okay.
And the kind of almost like they were probably speaking some form of Ebonics or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a very stylized, culturalized slang. Yeah. Whereas Mark spoke almost textbook
proper.
Spanish. Yeah, very proper. He's very well-spoken English, you know. But to hear that difference, like I could hear the questions, but I had no idea what they were saying.
That's funny.
And I'm fascinated by language. I learned Spanish. I took like 3 years of Spanish 1 in high school.
I know some Spanish words from watching Narcos.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought about that. I watched the first couple episodes of that, and I felt like...
But not words that I would want to say to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, Narcos is... I think I need to get back into that. I think I didn't give it a fair shake.
I just like the acting and the cinematography. Like, you know, everyone knows what happens in the story.
Right, and that's what I felt like when I was watching it. I was like, the real story of this is more interesting than what was being told.
Yeah, because they
deviate
a lot.
They deviate a lot, and I think they also sensationalize... Mm-hmm.
But it's a good show.
It is. Yeah. I mean, what do I say? Like, a billion people can't be wrong. So many people watch it and say, oh, you got to watch this. And I'm like,
A billion people can't be wrong. How many people voted for Trump?
Not a billion.
Okay. So you're still right.
Okay, good. That's what's most important to me is being right. I want to make sure that we're not interfering with time here. There's a contest tonight here at the Columbus Funny Bone.
Yes.
And you've participated in this in the past.
I have before.
And
Garrett, who's walking past, is on it tonight.
Oh, okay. I'm going to be hosting the show tonight, which I realized after I said yes to it, how much up and down there is for the host, you know, because you introduce everybody, and there's like 15 comics or whatever.
You have to climb the stairs like 20 times.
Yes, yeah, and I'm not in the best shape right now. I haven't been skating as much as I used to. I don't know if that's helpful or not. Skateboarding.
Okay.
I run, too, but... lately, I haven't been. I don't know why. The weather's nice.
I hula hoop for exercise, so I'm not judging you for
okay.
skating.
Okay. All right. Cool.
We're both
cool.
on the alternative fitness.
You know, I never knew hula hoop, like that the hula hoop could stay up. Like me and my sister had a hula hoop or whatever. We'd use it for games or whatever. But like whenever it came to like spinning it around your waist, I thought the idea was to just spin it as fast as you could and
okay.
it just go around three
Until
times
it
and
runs
fall.
Out of steam.
But I was in Hawaii and my friend Diane had a hula hoop and she was just like working it. Ooh. And I was like,
get like, those hips, girl.
I did not know this was a sexual toy. This is the most sexual thing I've ever seen.
It's very versatile.
Yeah. Is it like, do you do like the one-legged and then the arm and then
I can do a bunch of tricks.
Oh, really? Yeah. Is that something you learned on your own?
My friend taught me. My friend was really good and like I was just trying with her. She taught me over time. It took like a year before like I could keep it on my waist.
Right.
But then I learned all sorts of tricks and like I'm not good enough to perform. But I love hula hooping. Like I want people to watch me hula hoop. I'm like,
yeah.
Look at this cool thing I can do.
Maybe you should work that into the act.
Slowly over
yeah.
time.
Let's work on some other.
I have a lot of ideas for
yeah.
the future.
That's interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen a hula hoop on stage before. That could be a very unique, captivating experience for people like me who didn't know it's supposed to stay up. Mm-hmm. I might be the only person in the country that didn't know that. But
and then next is hula hooping on a skateboard.
Once we could I be we could be skate. A comedy team here. All right, well, let's get back on track.
Yes.
So, comedy found you
that
how?
That was totally unrelated.
That
so
was that's the whole. There's no. It's called totally unrelated because of my attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity. There's no way I can ever stay on one subject for very long.
That makes it more interesting. You talk about a lot of things.
I don't. I'm most concerned in this world with. Not making excuses, you know, for the way I am
okay.
and just being and being happy as I can be.
Full, like fully yourself.
Fully expressed, wholly myself. So how did comedy come to you? Like the idea that I'm going to go on stage on this date.
So I started writing jokes. I'd been writing jokes for a year before I went up on stage. And I was like, I'm going to do it one day, but hadn't decided when. And then me and my boyfriend at the time broke up, and I was really upset, and I got really drunk, and I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the open mic and just told my jokes.
So you knew that there were where the open mic was, you just
yeah,
weren't
I'd
going.
Yeah, I looked it up. I like knew everything. I had my jokes, I had the place, the time, I just had to go there.
I know that guy, I was going to flip him off, but I don't usually flip people off, unless they're from Cincinnati. I don't know why. And then you go, and how did it go?
It went well.
How drunk? Slurring drunk?
No. Like, I didn't drink that much at the time.
Okay.
So just like two drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't drunk, but I was tipsy, which was unusual for
right.
me then.
Right.
Not so much now.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've seen you now, so I know.
It's not a problem.
I know. So then you go up on stage, and then how soon after your first time did you do it again?
I went back the next week. I was so surprised because, like, people laughed at my jokes. I was like, oh, like, people think I'm funny? And so I just kept going. Like, I don't think I'm funny, but other people think I am. So I'm like,
it's weird because women aren't funny.
I know.
It's just like they're not allowed to be or something.
Yeah, women never got that part of the brain.
It just doesn't happen. And then, so you go back the second time. Was the second time better or worse than the first?
It was worse, but I'd already gotten the adrenaline rush from the first time, and I was like, I know I can do it. I'm just going to keep going until it
mm-hmm.
becomes good again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's sort of what it was for me. I did the first one, then I did the second one like a week. I think it was 2 weeks later, and then I didn't do it again for a year and a half.
Oh.
Because it was like, the first time went pretty well. In fact, I met Dan Swartout at my first
okay.
open mic, and I was like, even before I started, you know, before I went on stage, he was talking about being a touring comic and stuff like that and how he had to come back to Columbus because his wife was pregnant, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, or they were trying to have a baby, okay. I think, at the time.
You kind of have to be in the same place for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, kind of. And he was just like, it's too hard to stay out on the road and try to make any real money or make any real progress as an adult. And so I was thinking to myself, like, yeah, what a hack. Or, mm-hmm. you know, he probably just isn't that funny. And then he closed out the show and murdered, you know. I'm sitting there thinking like eating crow, you know. I didn't say anything to any time, and I was like, yeah. He was like, you should really stick with it.
Yeah.
So even in that year and a half that I wasn't performing, I was hearing his voice in my head,
okay,
saying, you got to get back out there, you got to do it. And I had one friend who kept asking me when I was going to be on stage again. Mm-hmm. He wanted to come see me. When are you going to do this? And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. You know, it was just, I kept saying I was going to do it again, but I don't think I really had any intention of doing it again. Mm-hmm. I think I thought I tried it. I thought I was funny, but I'm not. And I think that's probably a lot of people's story if they've only ever done one or two open mm-hmm. mics.
On the other hand, some people think they're funny even though they're not, and they keep pushing it. And eventually they fizzle out, you know. But
you would hope so. I think we probably both know a number of people where you kind of scratch your head like,
mm-hmm. how did you get this far?
Some people I think are like some career open micers. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you get into an open mic circuit, and Columbus has this possibility where you could go up enough, you could get on stage enough to feel like a real comedian.
Yeah.
You have dates. You might do some booked open mics and things like that. And you could get up enough that it's almost like you're actually doing more stage time or as many shows as a professional comedian would mm-hmm. do. It's just that you're doing it for yourself. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, I saw that a lot. And it was sort of like, I said, it's because comedy's cheaper than therapy.
Yeah.
Like going on stage and talking to a group of strangers, cheaper than talking to a therapist yeah. one-on-one. And I could see like the way people would like talk about their day that day. Mm-hmm. And I realized, well, if all you did is open mics and you're going to these open mics with the same people, you do have to generate a lot more new material, because one thing I don't want to hear from you is the set you just did at the last show. Mm-hmm. But the ones that did do that, that kept doing the same set all night, those were the people that were actually moving through the scene and progressing upward and getting to do paid shows, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But it was such a closed market, because you could be a professional comedian in Chicago, essentially. You probably have to travel every once in a while for gigs, but you could stay in one city. Same like New York or L.A. Mm-hmm. You don't really have to leave the city to make a few dollars doing comedy.
You were in Chicago, right?
I lived there
doing
for about
comedy?
A year. Yeah, I mean, I was already on the road doing comedy. So when I lived in Chicago, my incentive to like go out to the open mics was greatly reduced by the fact that I would leave on Wednesday or Thursday, come back late on Monday, and then Tuesday, I don't want to go back out. Wednesday, I don't want to go mm-hmm. back out, especially if I have to leave on Thursday again.
Yeah.
So when I did go out, I found that I'd like get in a car accident, mm. like just a little fender bender. Something stupid would always happen that would have me feel worse
okay.
than I did
yeah.
if I hadn't gone.
Yeah.
Does that ever happen for you when you go to an open mic and you're like, I could have felt better if I hadn't even performed?
Yeah, sometimes. Well, and then also the opposite happens, where I'm like, I don't really feel like going out, but then I force myself to, and I get there, and it's a good night.
Yeah.
You know, both ways.
Yeah, I used to feel that way about poker. Before comedy, I was like, I wasn't like a professional poker player, but it was my number one pastime. Mm-hmm. And there would be times where I'd be like, I don't really feel like playing, but I need to play. So I'd play, and I'd end up doing better than the times when I was, like, really amped up to play. And I find the same thing with comedy. It's like, when I'm kind of, like, reluctant, like, I don't really want to go up. You know, people are like, oh, you should go up, you should do a set. I'm like, I don't really want. Those seem to be the times that I actually do the best. Mm-hmm. And the times where I'm, like, busting at the seams to try something, it usually.
Yeah, because when you're, like, when you're not feeling it, you know, it comes off as laid back, even though it's apathy.
Yeah, yeah.
But other people are like, oh, he's so laid back and calm. And you're like, I don't care about anything. Like,
sure. I think the audience, in some sort of way, needs to be living vicariously through the performer, or at least relieving some sort of stress that everybody has been carrying around all day. Mm-hmm. So the more relatable you are with your anger or your peace or whatever it is, people are like, oh, yeah, I know somebody like this. Mm-hmm. This is just like my buddy or whatever. That can help. I find that comedians such as yourself who have an accent that's not, even some people that are hard to understand. I know this guy from Dayton named Carl.
Carl, yeah. Yeah. I love Carl.
And I find that he is funny, but he gets a certain amount of what I call a lean-in effect, mm-hmm. where you
yes.
have to lean in and listen mm-hmm. with all of your ears mm-hmm. and brain to understand what he's saying, and that causes you to be really involved in the joke. And it's also like he's doing cultural differences and things like that, which are funny for Americans always. But I've always found, personally, I like listening to people with an accent. And if we were to hang out for more than a couple hours, I would start mimicking your accent.
Yeah.
Not out of, like, a desire to impress you, but just because I think they say
No, it is a thing, yeah. But it's like you're expressing empathy. You know, it's like mirroring someone's actions or accent. Or,
sure.
Yeah.
I do it with people from Boston and and the British accent. Most commonly. So what's the path now? Now that you're a comedian and you're on the scene, what do you see for yourself moving forward? What are your desires, hopes?
Well, I like where I am now. It's a good scene. I've met some good people. I'm learning a lot. I want to stay in Columbus until I'm as good as I can be in Columbus and then move somewhere else. You know, there's like New York, Chicago, LA. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I know that I want to go somewhere else as soon as I'm done with Columbus. Not done with Columbus. Just like there's nothing else here. Then I'll go to the next place. And I started going to poetry open mics. So that's something I want to explore also. I've been writing poetry for a long time, but I just performed for the first time like 2 weeks ago.
Was your poem funny?
This one was, because I didn't... It was at a poetry open mic, and all of them were sad, and I was like, okay, I'm going to tell a funny poem.
Yeah. Is there... I always say that comedy is the lowest form of entertainment in terms of like an open mic. We'll let anybody perform at a comedy open mic, but sometimes poetry or music open mics don't let comedians in. Or like you can't be a music act at a poetry open mic.
Yeah.
And you can't be a poet at a music open mic. But
Which
comedy sometimes
sense.
Gets in. But
doesn't make sense to me because, you know, so we're comedians. We're like, I think it's easy for me because this is what I like to do. But for a musician to do comedy, like, it would be difficult for them. Or for me to play an instrument, you know, we both respect each other's art. So, like, why are they shitting on comedians? And, you know, like, it doesn't make sense to me.
I think that part of it is that anybody that's running a show is usually a purist. That's why they run the show. And so, I mean, I've even seen it with comedy open mics where if they don't like the person... then they just don't let them perform, or they give them a shitty spot or something like that. But I think that pound for pound, comedy is one of the most accepting forms of entertainment as far as we'll let musicians, poets. Like, if your poem's funny, come on in. If your poem's not funny, you got to go first. That's
it. It's funny. It just has to be funny. That's all it
is.
Yeah,
that's
like.
The attempt at funny is all that we really are asking for. One thing I like about the workshop that they do here is, like, if it's your first time, they kind of make you go up on stage and say, okay, well, what is it that you want to talk about? And whenever I see, usually it would be like one person that's like, oh, man, I don't, you know. And it's like, oh, you really haven't thought about this. And then you'll see somebody else that goes up, and it's like, how, are you sure this is your first time? Because it's like very methodical, very well done, and stuff like that. Is that where you were when you first started? Were your jokes, are you embarrassed of your first set?
No, I still have some of my jokes from my first set. And, like, I'd been writing these jokes for a year. So they were revised.
Okay.
And, like, when I did my first set, someone said to me, like, I can tell that you write. So, like, that felt really nice.
I could tell. I mean, the first time I met you was in Yellow Springs, which is my hometown.
That was, like, a month after I'd started. Like,
really?
Very, very
I remember cussing you out from the stage for being funny.
I remember that.
But that's, like, that's me saying welcome to the club.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you can accept... somebody shitting on you with respect, you know what I mean, and love, and understand that that's where it's coming from. Because I think that was the first thing that I loved the most about being in comedy was when I first started. I probably had a little bit more, was older than most of the people that I was performing with, I think, at the time. And so, and I've lived a very rich life of experience, and I'm articulate, and people think I'm confident, which I'm not. But it's like overcompensation.
Fake it well
I fake it really good. So I think that there was like a lot of people telling, you know, saying fuck you to me. You know, welcome to the stage, this next guy, he's funny, fuck him. And and so I was like, oh, okay. Like the roasty kind of environment of comedy was my favorite thing when I first started. And then I would do things sometimes when I'd go on stage where like if the guy before me bombed, I would address it. I remember one time I was in a Clash contest and I said, I just got on stage and I was like, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to tell jokes.
A Clash Con?
Clash of the Comics is sort of like this talent search, but it was in Dayton. They do it at a lot of Funny Bones in the country, but it's basically like 10 comics, get 5 minutes, the more people you bring.
And then you're going to go roast people.
Well, it wasn't a roasty thing, you know what I mean? It was just that I thought it was my job to shit on other comics.
Okay.
And then, like, since I've been a professional comedian, I've had headliners shit on me, mm-hmm. and I realized, like, oh, that's not fun. That's really
this
not
fun. This
is
a cultural thing. We shit on each other.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just when you're shitting down on somebody, it's much worse than if you're, like, slinging it to the side,
that's
laterally.
True.
You know what I mean? If somebody that you respect as higher up than you mm-hmm. is dumping on you, yeah. it doesn't. It,
like, for real. Like
for real.
You're a shit person. Or,
yeah, yeah. It seldom feels good. Now, I have pretty thick skin, and I was definitely understanding why this last time it happened. I understood why he did it, and it was mostly just, like, a reclaiming of the stage. You know, like, and I have this philosophy still. If you take a shit on stage, don't be mad if I kick some of it back off onto you, because I got to clear the stage.
Right?
I'm not going to walk around in your shit.
Yeah.
Have you had situations where you felt like you had to follow somebody you couldn't follow or somebody couldn't follow you? Have you ever?
I mean, sometimes I've had to go up after someone that's really funny and, like, you know, I'll go do my best. Like, I think I'm funny too, but, like, they just slayed the entire room. Like, there's no way I can match up to that.
Right.
But so, you know, just address that. Oh, hey, the show's over. Now it's my turn.
Yeah.
Something little. Like,
do you find it harder to follow a good comedian or a bad comedian?
A good comedian.
Yeah.
Because the expectation has been raised.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times.
A bad comedian's easy. Like, they want to laugh. You did not do anything for them. So,
yeah.
Now here I am. Like,
I think it's I think there's a couple different ways that can go, because I think in a situation where like where there's 15 comics, if the first guy's funny but the second two aren't funny, mm-hmm. the audience knows there's going to be a lot more people coming, and so they're kind of holding on for something. But like in a three-man show, mm-hmm. if the MC is funny but the feature isn't getting laughs or whatever, mm-hmm. it's sometimes hard to follow that because they've had enough time to ice the audience off.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's almost like now I got to rebuild all of
yeah,
the energy.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, but by that same token, I've seen people be in their head when somebody slays and they know they can't compete with that level of humor.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of just trying to ride the wave, they become self-deprecating and their confidence and their shoulders are slumped.
It doesn't really affect me, like, mentally. Like, I'm still going to go do my set just the same way. But, like, it's easier if... I mean, I don't get affected. Like, even when I bomb, like, it's fine. Like,
yeah.
I don't let it get...
It's
like,
not
my
like
feelings
you don't
are fine.
You don't lose sleep?
Or nothing. Like, just my feelings aren't affected. I don't know where I was going with this.
Following a good comedian or bad comedian.
Oh, and they tend to become self-deprecating
because
they're like, oh, they aren't as funny. Like, no, I just do my normal set. Like, because we have different styles of humor.
Sure.
And yeah, you guys really like that person. And you might really like me too, or you might not.
Right.
But I'm just going to do my thing and then
absolutely.
We'll see.
I think that's the best methodology to have. I mean, pretending like whoever performed before you wasn't even there can be a benefit, and sometimes it can be, you could be missing something. But I think for me, I pretty much try not to watch too much of what's happening before mm-hmm. I get on stage. I want to listen for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Virginia Beach this last week, and in the MC, if he was doing well, I knew I was going to do great.
Okay.
But if he was having a hard time, I knew I needed to change a few things
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't. He's such a good comedian. His name's Travis Carl. He's a good writer. His jokes are well written, and there's not a lot of fluff to them.
Mm-hmm.
He gets right to the joke. So I felt like that was an easy act to follow.
Okay.
But I've never had to really follow anybody who's what I would call super urban.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to me would be the most challenging. I find I don't struggle in black audiences, but there are some clubs in the country that are 80% black that I've definitely been in my own head because I have this own story about myself about not being black enough
mm-hmm.
or being too black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too black for white people, not black enough for black people.
But I have a similar thing where, like, black audiences, they don't really like my comedy because I'm like, this is my African identity. I'm not African American. I'm African. And
yeah.
I feel like they feel like I'm trying to distance myself, but I'm not. I'm just trying to tell my story. Like,
yeah.
So I've noticed that I don't do well in urban rooms because of identity differences.
Interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. I would have never thought. I would have thought, if anything, that would have been...
My number one fan.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Apparently not. Like,
does anybody ever tell you go back to Africa? Like, as like a joke?
No.
Nobody's ever said that.
Not as a joke. As go a back real home. Thing, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, okay, good. If they mean it, then that's okay. Yeah. If they mean it, then that's okay. I'm okay with that.
But yeah, so you find it harder to follow an urban comic?
Yeah, and it's only ever happened to me a couple of times where, but it, I mean, it has to be like what I would consider, I don't want to say super urban, but like super animated. I don't consider Kevin Hart an urban comic.
Okay.
But I don't know, because if I'm opening for these for somebody that I consider to be a super urban act, mm-hmm. I've never had a problem.
Okay.
I can't say never, but most of the time it's not a problem, especially if the audience is mostly black. This is what I figured out this weekend, and I think I already knew it, but I just wasn't saying it. Mm-hmm. If the audience paid to be there, mm-hmm. it's much easier every time.
If the audience they're more open?
Well, just because they gave something mm-hmm. and expect something. If you give nothing, mm-hmm. you expect it to be worth nothing.
But then you're that much more surprised. When
sometimes. Okay. And some people are just kind. But some people just yeah. go do shit because it's free.
Yeah.
And sometimes those aren't the kindest people. Mm-hmm. And I think also, like, for black audiences, for black people in general, at least this is how I was raised, is that we always kind of be like, I'm funnier than this motherfucker. You know,
yeah.
like, even very before a word comes out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that you have to contend with in a comped room, as opposed to like, because like in Virginia Beach on Saturday, there was a bunch of the staff were at a wedding, so they cut back on comps,
okay.
and so almost every ticket was paid.
Okay.
It was a smaller audience than we would have expected, but it was the best audience
okay.
that we had for the whole week,
yeah.
and we sold it out twice, and it was just like, oh, that's the difference.
Mm.
When they pay, they have. They're committed as like we're committed. You know what I mean? It's almost like the difference between getting paid for a show and doing a show for free. Usually we give our all. I would say it's mm-hmm. pretty stupid to go up there and just...
For a show versus an open mic.
Right.
Yeah,
because I definitely suffer from that myself. That's why I don't do a lot of open mics. Not because money's so important to me that I need to get paid for my set. I've never said that. It's
except
just that...
Except for now. But
except for just now when I said it.
As a joke.
As a passing. But I do have this... remarkable thing that happens to me when I'm doing like an open mic, and especially if it's just comics there, where I'm like, I get on stage and I'm like, I don't even. I'll do the jokes, but I'm not doing
not
the jokes.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm telling the jokes, but I'm not doing the jokes.
Yeah.
I guess is what I would say. And I don't know if that's just so I don't embarrass myself, or because I think in the long run it does embarrass me more. When I don't get the laughs that I think this joke deserves. And a lot of times I'll do a joke one time, it doesn't get a laugh, and I never do that joke
yeah.
again.
Yeah. And then also, you know, so you go to an open mic to find out if your joke is good enough, and like, yeah, it is, or... And sometimes you need to act out the jokes, so when you do it at an open mic, you don't act it out. You know, like, you practice at an open mic, and then you go do it in a show, but if you're just saying the words, then you've only half practiced it. You know?
That's the thing. And I think that's... Like, I write a lot, use very little of what I write.
Okay.
I try to, like, squeeze it in here and there, but that's what open mics are for, and that's why I've been, like, trying to do them more often. But I still have this whole, like...
Yeah, because you've been doing comedy a long time. You've gone a lot of places.
I've been around a little bit.
You come
bit.
To the open mic, you're like, I'm back here.
It's not even like I'm back here. That's not really that. My thing is, like, at an open mic, my favorite part is hanging out with you guys, like, with the other comedians.
Yeah.
And that's the best part of being a comic, mm-hmm. is having other comedian friends. I don't think anybody can be a successful comedian without being friends with a group of comedians or being able to be friendly in a group of comedians. And so that's, like, what I'm really getting... gets my juices going.
Mm-hmm.
If there's like people laughing at other comics that are going on stage, I'm much more likely to give a full performance.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just comics kind of standing around in the back of the room talking to
yeah.
each other, I'm not. I'll cross my name off a list to talk.
Yeah.
I'm talking into a microphone, not that valuable if people aren't listening.
I don't like open mics where it's just comedians. Like, it's fine, but I see you guys all the time.
Right.
Like, I didn't come here to tell jokes just to you. You
right.
know, like, you've heard these jokes already.
Right, and that's the other thing is that, like, if I go to an open mic on short notice and I don't have, like, something that's I'm dying to try,
mm-hmm.
then I end up just doing, like, older bits, trying
Same.
To rekindle
yeah.
them somehow. And sometimes that's not
and
the
I
best
like
feeling.
It, yeah.
I don't either.
I'm
don't
just
like
going
that
just to be there, like, not doing anything, really.
So how long have you been doing comedy?
For 2 years.
Two years. Yeah. And what? When do you think you're going to get to that point? How, do you have like a timeline of like within 5 years I want to be ready to leave Columbus? Or do you just like letting it happen?
I don't have a timeline. I remember people like Louis C.K. saying it takes 10 years before you're good at something. So I'm like, oh, 10 years.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, like, I can see that I've improved, and other people are telling me that I've so, you know, I've grown a lot in these 2 years. So, and I can feel myself growing. So when I feel like I'm not growing anymore, then it's time to move.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good philosophy. What's the most important thing to you outside of comedy?
I like my friends, like social connections. Like, I'm kind of a loner. I like stay by myself. I enjoy solitude, but then sometimes that gets lonely. And so I like being around people. It distracts me, you know, like when you're anxious or depressed, or being around people helps me with my mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that too for me. I mean, it doesn't. Being around people that I choose to be around.
Yes. Yeah. Right? The right people.
Sure. And what do you think is like your biggest, I don't even know how to ask this. Is there anything that could keep you from comedy? Is there something that you could be like, you know what? I'm going to go do that instead.
6 minutes ago. I wanted to be a rapper a long time ago. But I can't, like, my mouth can't do it. If I could, I would be doing that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I assume you've written a rap?
Yeah, this was like years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tried for my friends, and they were like, oh, but they're my friends.
Yeah.
It's like, this is embarrassing. I'm never doing this again.
I saw these guys outside of a rap open mic one time, and I was just driving by. I was on my way to like Wiley's in Dayton.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, as I was driving by, I was like, that's just like comedy. Like, they're standing outside smoking cigarettes or whatever, not listening to the guy that's inside doing his raps. And I thought to myself, like, that's got to be a much harder thing to break into. Because I've never been invited to, like, an amateur rap show.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would want to go. But I do know a lot of DJs and people that are MCs.
Mm-hmm.
But their live performance ability is so much more limited than what we have as comics, it seems like. At least in Ohio, maybe. Probably.
What do you mean? I don't know what you mean.
So, like, how many comedy open mics do we have this week? Like,
okay.
You know, like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know of any rap open mics.
Okay, yeah. They have music open mics, but that's all music.
Right.
Yeah, it's like maybe 2 or 3 rappers.
Right.
You know, versus a sea of, like, acoustic guitars.
Yeah. All right, bitches. You know, like, like, hold on. Hummingbird's not done yet.
I'm still tuning my guitar.
I think if I had stuck with it in my youth, there's a very real possibility that I would be more into skateboarding and snowboarding than comedy, because they call me out of bed. Comedy doesn't really call me out of bed.
Yeah.
But like the ability to go skate on a good day by myself, like when I get the park to myself, or snowboarding on a weekday when kids are at school.
Mm-hmm. And you have the park to yourself.
And I have the park to myself. That kind of shit, I'm like, while I'm doing it, I'm like, this is all I ever want to do. Even at, like, shitty Mad River or snow trails, like the Ohio places, I'm just feeling it in a way that, and I took 20-some-odd years away from it, probably because for a long time I didn't have any health insurance. I don't even think that was it. I think it was cold out there, snowboarding, and then skateboarding. Once I started driving, for whatever reason, in Ohio, I stopped skateboarding. But now, and this didn't exist when I was a kid, now there's skate parks everywhere.
Skate parks everywhere.
Skate parks everywhere.
Yeah.
This guy just walked up and gave us 2 cards.
Do you
unsolicited.
Know him?
Afric Network. I have no idea what this is, so it's a very well designed card. It's pretty.
Yeah. This is Tigrinya Alphabet. It says YSM. Right. I don't know what it means.
Oh, okay.
But I thought
this is the Eye of Ra.
Yeah.
I know that from watching Stargate. Hello. I ain't bragging. I've seen a movie or two.
Well, I've never seen that, but I still knew what the Eye of Ra was.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, you're smarter than me, probably, because you were educated outside of the country. All right, well, we got to wrap this up because I got to host this show. Are you? You're not doing
I'm not on it.
Are you on any of these?
Friends. No, I found out after the sign-ups were done because I have a problem with procrastination also. Mm. Yeah, so I'm not on it this round.
Well, then you're going to be a great comedian because procrastination is king.
We're in the same boat.
All right, Walta, thank you for your time. Is there anything you want to say? Plug your social media.
Thanks for having me, Adrian. This was a lot of fun. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook, on Twitter and Instagram under Where's Walta, and Facebook just Walta.
W-A-L-T-A?
Perfect, yes.
Got it. Thanks so much, Walta.
Thank you. Under Where's Walta, and Facebook just Walta.
W-A-L-T-A?
Perfect.
Sun comes shining. my way. Why should I fight such a beautiful
listening. Download more episodes from the Podbean app. Also available at iTunes and Stitcher or at totallyunrelated.com.